You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to NSPS Radio Hour for today. We're going to be talking about National Surveyors Week. We've had a lot of discussion and interaction through email and other sources about National Surveyors Week now for a while, and with it coming up within about a month, we thought we should go ahead and have this show because we want everybody to hear the information, although there's things posted on the website and there's a lot of other information. Our guest today is Frank Lanek, who is the NSPS Area 2 Director, which is the, I guess, I started to say Northeast, Frank, but it really doesn't go into New England. I guess it's just the sort of the Mid-Atlantic. Maybe that's a better word. Does that sound good?
Yeah, that's good. I cover Delaware, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, New York, and Ontario.
And I'll say another thing about Frank's activities. He's also been really active in a lot of things and been very good about reaching out even beyond his area and helping us out in a lot of ways. As a matter of fact, he was just in attendance at the West Virginia Surveyors Conference this past weekend and was really glad you were able to go. And from my understanding of the correspondence we've had just in the brief time I've been back, it sounds like it was a pretty productive meeting.
It was a wonderful meeting. I met with the officers and directors of the West Virginia Society and lots of their members, and I spoke to their general membership meeting. The response I got from them was very warm, very positive, and I look forward to continuing to work with them.
Yeah, that's good. Maybe I should give a brief explanation. As NSPS is transitioning into the joint membership program across the country, of course, we still have some state societies that are not in the program, and West Virginia is currently one of those, and there's a number of reasons for that, but we're encouraged, particularly after Frank's visit, that they are going to be coming on. But as we transition and not knowing exactly where we're going to go in terms of structure once all this is said and done, there have been a few area director spots where the director's term has expired and it hasn't been filled. So Frank's been really great about helping out in some of those areas, particularly the ones near to where he is, to sort of fill the void, if you will. And we appreciate you doing that, Frank. And so I guess the first thing we really ought to get into is National Surveyors Week itself and all the things that we've been trying to do. But before I do that, Frank, just for the audience information, if you could give us a background on yourself and what you're doing and how you got to where you are.
Okay. Well, I'm a licensed surveyor from New Jersey. I was born and raised here. In fact, the people from West Virginia gave me a hard time because I don't sound like I'm from New Jersey. But I truly was born and raised here. Started my surveying career back in the mid-'80s, early 80s, and now I'm currently licensed in four states, New Jersey, Delaware, Pennsylvania, which are all 15 minutes from my home. And then I'm also licensed in North Carolina. That came from working for a large engineering firm and doing all their GPS processing over the years. So, but currently I am employed by Leica Geosystems as a technical sales representative. And Leica's been real cooperative, allowing me to spend a lot of time working with the National Society and really working with the surveying profession. In fairness, I have to say I had great mentors over the years. Glenn McAllister from Pannoni Associates, Steve Martinelli from Martinelli Land Surveying. They were individuals who, early on, when I was a rodman, instilled in me the importance of participating in local chapter, state society, and that's stuck with me my whole professional career.
You know, I agree with you. That makes a really big difference, how your if they're your mentors or your employers, whichever the case may be, are supportive. I was fortunate to be in the same situation myself when I came into to surveying, and particularly as I progressed and through licensure and whatever. But the guy who was the primary partner or was owner of the company when I went to work there, and eventually some of us became partners. But he was just like that. He felt very strongly that we should engage with our profession and be active in associations and take part in activities that were related to the association or to the profession itself. And I agree, that goes a long way. And I think it helps to free people up a little bit to feel as though it's okay. Some people, I think, sometimes might get intimidated, but when you have people like that who are your employees or your mentors, it does make a big difference.
Well, what I remember hearing early on in my career from some companies was, we don't want to bring our employees down to the state society meetings because somebody's just going to poach them. They're going to take our good guys. but that's really so unprofessional. Where the bigger firms, well, the two gentlemen I worked for and the firms that they represented said, well, if I lose these people, that's okay, because they're just going to make our profession stronger. They'll go somewhere else and carry good habits with them. And that type of professional attitude really says a lot about the character of those individuals.
Oh, I would agree with that. It does. And recognition that collaboration and activity is the most important thing. And, of course, I think in your case, at least my understanding of your situation, that not only did you get that kind of support at the professional level, but you've been really active in some mission-type work as well. And I think when you get involved in that kind of thing, it demonstrates even more so to you, I think, how important those kind of things are.
Well, yes, it's true. I guess my mom would probably pull my ear for not calling out to her and my dad for giving me a good upbringing. It's true. I was a Peace Corps volunteer in Africa during the early 80s and taught in a Catholic mission school for 3 years. And I don't know. It's given me a lot of sensitivity towards people's needs, but it also told me that you can do anything if you put your mind to it. Against any kinds of odds, you know, you can be successful if you try. You know, the support I got from surveyors when I, as I've been working with the Schoenstatt Instrument Group, raising money for mine detectors and sending them around the world, shows that they're, you know, that we're all concerned about what's going on. We just need communication. We need an outlet, some way to get involved. But being asked is important, and having a vector, a way to do it, is also very important. You know, you don't think about it, that there are still countries today that, you know, Syria, Afghanistan, lots of countries where bombs are being dropped on the public, on ordinary people just trying to make a living. And when surveyors in Michigan or surveyors in Pennsylvania, you know, become a part of that, it's really impressive.
Yeah, that's very true. As a matter of fact, you were talking about the program that Schoenstatt's running, and we actually have something about that on our website as well, trying to get more people involved in that program that they're running, and you probably know more about it than I do, so you might want to just touch on that so people know what we're talking about.
Well, we could, and we could actually come back and do this another time. The Schoenstatt program is incredible. When did we meet in St. Louis?
07, I believe it was, or 08.
08, 07. That was my first visit to NSPS as a governor from New Jersey. And while walking through the exhibit hall, I met Michael Head, who was then the president of Schoenstatt Instruments.
Yeah, I remember him.
From Kearneysville, West Virginia, I might add. Sorry, a little frog in my throat. You know, he was in their exhibit booth. Sorry about that. He was in their exhibit booth, and I was speaking to him as if he was just a salesman. And he had a poster which said if you donate a one of their metal locators, his company would do the same thing. And I got to talking with him about it, and I told him that my church would be very interested in getting involved in a program like that. And within a couple of weeks, we hammered out the details and started to send, my church started to send money, raise money, and send it to Schoenstatt. It's a very nice program that they run. They don't send money anywhere. They actually send the devices to individuals who are going to use them. The groups that receive the metal locators are vetted by the United Nations. So what happens is a country that has a problem with landmines or unexploded ordnance approaches the UN. They say they've got a team that they can put in the field to locate these explosives or unexploded things, but they don't have the money to pay for the devices. The UN turns to Schoenstatt, and Schoenstatt actually takes the devices that we donate. They match one-to-one. If my church donates one, Schoenstatt donates another, and they send them directly to the individuals who are going to use them. So there's not money getting lost in the process, which is often a concern from people, you know, sending money overseas.
Right, and that can happen on an individual basis too, though, right? I mean, an individual could do the same thing.
Yes, indeed. The advantage of the program that we have is that, small advantage, anyone who makes the donation, what happens is a lot of people have been sending donations to my church, and they receive a letter back from my church thanking them for their donation. So they can apply that with their taxes.
I see. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense, because it's donated to a charitable organization.
Correct.
Yeah.
That's
okay.
Correct.
Yeah, that makes good sense.
So we've sent over 500 all around the world, Vietnam, Cambodia, which I had the pleasure of visiting a couple of years ago, but also you know, Europe, places in Europe, Africa, South America, just lots and lots of good things being done by good people.
Yeah, that's absolutely true, and we're within probably less than a minute of our first break, so when we come back, I want to talk about what our National Survey Week activities are, of course, but I wanted to preface that with our conversation up to this point, really to, as a demonstration of how important outreach is and how important personal involvement is in what's going on in your profession, which is really a lot about what National Surveyors Week is and trying to get people more involved in those activities as we're moving forward. So I wanted to be able to frame the message that way before we begin. So let's go to that first break, and we'll be right back.
Attention surveyors, are you aware that yellow stick you're using is saving lives all over the world? Yes, that pinfinder is clearing fields and villages of unexploded cluster bombs and other hidden explosives in over 25 countries. Schoenstatt, in cooperation with international mine action programs, provides free locators to where they are most urgently needed. To find out how you can help, visit the NSPS website at nsps.us.com. And thank you.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your Constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on americaswebradio.com.
Quick stakes are not just an affordable alternative to heavy wooden stakes, but they save the surveyor time, which means money, by being easy to carry, easy to ride on, and even easier to see. For more information about quick stakes, go to www.quickstake.com, or for a sample, give us a call at 800-438-0387.
And here's something new from Schoenstatt. Did you know that Schoenstatt has upped the ante on trade-ins? Now you can trade in any instrument, theirs or a competitor's, in any condition, working or not, and receive more in trade than ever before. Plus, they'll pay the freight both ways. Contact your local dealer for details or go to Schoenstatt.com. That's S-C-H-O-N-S-T-E-D-T.com.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com. the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back. We're with Frank Lenick today talking about a number of things. We began the show talking about the importance of outreach and the program that he's been involved in through his church with Schoenstatt. And you were starting to tell me about your first event or your first fundraiser, Frank, before as we were coming back from break. Maybe you could share that with us.
Well, it was the most amazing thing I ever saw in my life. When I returned back from St. Louis, I brought it to the church committee and I said, you know, I think this is a program we'd like to participate in. They all agreed. We had a church supper. We have a church supper every year where we donate all the proceeds, and this one was in June. And we sent our money off to Schoenstatt to buy a couple of locators, and they matched them, and we were feeling really good. Those first locators went to Tajikistan in Asia, Central Asia. But what happened after that was quite unexpected. The Philadelphia Inquirer, which is a large newspaper here in the New Jersey, Philadelphia area, wrote an article about it. That article came out the first week of December, and it had a picture of me and the magnetic locator, and was just about, you know, good things. It was a nice positive news article. Well, that article was on a Saturday morning, and on Monday morning we received our first check from somebody who read the paper, and by Christmas we had received over $20,000 in donations from people all over the Delaware Valley. It was truly heartwarming. Every donation came with a letter. You know, some were in lieu of gifts for Christmas. We decided to purchase a locator. Some of them were from retired individuals. I'm a retired school teacher, and, you know, I would really like to help. I'm sorry I don't have more money to send you, but I really am glad that you're doing this. Retired veterans who said, you know, thank you for helping to clean up after this. We did our work when we needed to, and now someone's, you know, there helping to clean up. It was truly, everyone was a heart wrencher. You know, we went right out and sent more locators out to Vietnam and Cambodia from that donation.
It's human nature, and we all are in that same situation. But as long as things are in the headlines, kind of, people sort of keep it in their mind. But when it stops being on the headlines, you just tend to think, okay, everything's back to a state of peace and normality, and that's really just not true.
And I guess we can use that as a segue, if you don't mind, into what it is we're trying to achieve for National Surveyors Week.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, I was going to use the publicity side of it to get there anyway, because, you know, part of National Surveyors Week is letting people know about what we do. So, yeah, let's get right into that.
That is the probably the single most important part about National Surveyors Week, is telling people what we do. When we did it a couple of years ago, we had a big push. We got a lot of participation, at least I know in my local, in the states surrounding me, with scout groups and school groups and on county courthouses and state houses, setting up survey equipment so that the public could see you and stop and ask you a question. Every surveyor knows when they're set up on the side of the road with an instrument, a young child will walk by and say, hey, take my picture, you know. But the idea is that the public really doesn't know what it is that we do. And unless we take the time to tell them, they really don't appreciate the service that we provide for them. One of the key programs that we do at NSPS that doesn't get enough airtime is TrigStar, where individual surveyors go into high school classes and teach them about surveying. To touch on the public, to inform them what we do, is really one of the most important functions of our professionals.
It absolutely is, and one of the things that has always been so interesting, interesting to me about TreeStar is the fact that the teachers really like get involved in it too, because it provides that practical application for what the children are studying. And go ahead.
I've often heard a surveyor say, "Well, you know, we're spending this money on TreeStar, and none of these winners have become surveyors." And I said, "Well, that's not the point. We didn't want to make 10,000 new surveyors, though that would be nice. What we really did was we introduced 10,000 citizens of our country into surveying. Told them what it is we do and the services we provide. We're not just people standing on the side of the road dodging cars."
Yeah, that's in that same vein. I was just at the Montana Surveyors Conference this past weekend, and they've gotten really active. I think it actually started through the WestFed group, but they've gotten really active in an activity called TWIST, Teaching with Spatial Technologies. And I don't know if you know about it, but I hope NSPS will begin to get more active in that program too, because what it does is it's like a little training session that teachers go to, maybe middle school teachers perhaps, and help them understand the using technology or spatial technology in their teaching activities, and of course in our case tied to surveying. But that's another really good program that's out there that surveyors should be involved in.
Well, there's a lot of ways. Last week I spoke at a National Engineers Week job career fair. You know, there's many ways to get involved. It's a matter of being connected, being asked, and then participating. I think that most surveyors would participate if asked.
Yeah, I think you're right, and that's part of the thing that we strive to do a better job at, is to making sure that everybody does get asked and then is provided some information to be part of the program. And you've done a lot of work so far on this one, this particular year coming up, as what we're trying to do with National Surveyors Week activities is actually tied to a bigger purpose. And maybe you want to begin talking about that some.
Absolutely. I would say that there's five major things about National Surveyors this week. The first we already discussed is public awareness, to inform people about what surveyors do. It's also a learning opportunity for surveyors, because the technology, GPS in particular, has advanced tremendously over the last 10 to 15 years. And this is an opportunity for us to learn more about how it works, kind of a stealth opportunity, I think. But the real important thing is that the National Geodetic Survey is working on a new height modernization program, which they call GravD. And GravD is a program where they're going to create a gravity model for elevations, and that gravity model will be completed sometime around 2022, if funding remains the same for the federal government. And the gravity model, that's how we're going to get elevations from GPS. That's going to happen in 2022. But all surveyors who are using GPS know that we use a hybrid geoid model right now, which is a combination of gravity and benchmarks to get our NAVD 88 elevations from GPS. So we use a geoid model to get our elevations from GPS. And the National Geodetic Survey prepares a new geoid model on the average of about every 3 years. The last one that came out was in 2012. And those of us who have participated in the Survey USA in 2011, some of our observations were included in the preparation of that geoid model. So what is happening now is that they're going to prepare. This is our sort of a, I don't want to say it's a last chance, but it's a great opportunity for us to affect change for the next geoid model. At the present time, the errors in the geoid model run from, I guess, about 2 to 10 centimeters, which affects the elevations we get when we use GPS. So what they're asking us to do is to observe NAVD-88 benchmarks with our GPS receivers for 4 hours or more, and to submit that data through the OPIS website as a shared occupation. So that's the OPIS database program. You set up any kind of static GPS receiver that receives L1 and L2 signals. You log data for 4 hours, and you send that to the National Geodetic Survey along with a couple of photographs. They will evaluate your data. They'll look at your photographs and your report. And if it meets their standard, they will publish it. More importantly, they will take that data and use it in the derivation of the next geoid model, which will probably happen in 2015 or 2016. If you were to look at a map, and there is a map available that you can put on Google Earth that shows the problems, you'll see that most of the United States has problems in the 8 to 10 centimeter range with their geoid models. So this is a great opportunity for surveyors to get involved, to do these observations, improve their geoid model so they'll have better elevations. In addition to getting a new geoid model, the National Geodetic Survey is going to use this data for two other purposes. One is they're going to develop a new tool for transforming the NAVD-88 elevations to the new gravimetric datum in 2022. Currently, surveyors are familiar with a software called VertCon, which converts NGVD-29 elevations to NAVD-88 elevations. So this would be the next tool that we're going to need for our profession. So it's important that we get involved in that. The second thing that NGS is going to do with this data is that they're going to monitor, they want multiple observations on the same benchmarks so they can monitor subsidence and uplift. Now, many of you may not be affected by this, but where I practice in New Jersey, certainly where you live in Maryland, Delaware, there is a lot of subsidence going around where the ground is actually dropping. And
it's time for us to go to our second break, Frank. Let's do that, and we'll come back and pick up on that topic when we get back.
Very good.
Getting into underground utility location? If so, you'll want to know about the Schonstadt Instrument Company's MPC kit, a multi-purpose combo for locating both ferrous objects and underground pipes and cables. And because it consists of two instruments in one package, it qualifies for trade-in allowances on two locators. Any kind, any make, any condition. Contact your dealer for details or visit www.schonstadt.com. That's S-C-H-O-N-S-T-E-D-T.com.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
Quick stakes are not just an affordable alternative to heavy wooden stakes, but they save the surveyor time, which means money, by being easy to carry, easy to ride on, and even easier to see. For more information about quick stakes, go to www.quickstake.com, or for a sample, give us a call at 800-438-0387.
Attention surveyors. Are you aware that that yellow stick you're using is saving lives all over the world? Yes, that pinfinder is clearing fields and villages of unexploded cluster bombs and other hidden explosives in over 25 countries. Schonstedt, in cooperation with international mine action programs, provides free locators to where they are most urgently needed. To find out how you can help, visit the NSPS website at nsps.us.com. And thank you.
You're listening to americaswebradio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
And we're back for our third segment today with Frank Lenick. And we were talking as we went to break about some of the uses that NGS will be able to employ for the data that we're hopefully going to provide during National Surveyors Week on a large scale. We're really hoping that's going to go across the country. Frank, as I mentioned, we have our Parker Davis Quick Stakes contest every week about this time, and so I want us to go ahead and do that. And for the audience members who may not be familiar with it, Parker Davis Quick Stakes is one of our sponsors, and each week we have a question that I ask to the guest, and the first person to email to quickstakescontest@americaswebradio.com, and quick is spelled Q-U-I-Q, no C, so it's Q-U-I-Q Stakes Contest, all one word, at americaswebradio.com. And give the correct reply that Frank is going to give when I ask the question, and win the gift certificate for the week. So we're going to make this an easy one, Frank. We're just going to have our question today be, what is your position in NSPS at this point?
I am the Area 2 Director.
Area 2 Director, NSPS Area 2 Director. So for those who are listening and want to participate in the competition, that is the correct answer for today. Thanks for helping with that, Frank. Now, before we went to break, you began a discussion about a second use of the data being provided to do monitoring related to subsidence and uplift. And so if you want to continue that discussion, we can do that.
I will indeed. The new datums which are on the horizon that are coming are going to be time dependent. And so they're going to be delta X, delta Y, delta Z, and delta T. There's going to be a time issue involved in all the coordinates that are going to be published by the National Geodetic Survey. And we don't like to think about our coordinates moving. We like to think of them being permanent and solid. But here in New Jersey, at least down closer to the ocean, we find that our ground is settling at a rate of 1 to 4 millimeters a year. And if you think about it, the last time the National Geodetic Survey came through New Jersey was probably in the 1950s. So in 60-odd years, say at a rate of 4 millimeters a year, there's been quite a drop in our benchmarks. And if you level between them, you don't notice the difference because they're going down at the same rate. But if you use GPS, you can see them. And this is the reason why NGS is worried about it. So it's something we will have to take into account with our measurements, and it's something that this data that we collect during National Surveyors Week, or any time, actually, we do an Opus DB on an NAV D88 benchmark, they will use this data and track what's happening vertically through time. So that's another great use for this data.
Yeah, and that's, so maybe this would be a good point to, I don't know if you want to get into details of what we're actually asking people to do, or maybe mention the websites where they can find information.
Absolutely. The first thing I would say, the first website people should go visit, and not just because you're our executive director, is the NSPS website, because it really talks about, you know, what are the different things we can do as a profession. I happen to be a GPS geek. I like GPS. I've used it for years, and it's important to me and what I do. But not everybody is twisted like I am. There are other applications. There's other services you can provide. As I said earlier in our conversation, talking to school groups and scout groups during National Surveyors Week is a good thing. David Holland from Virginia suggested trying to set up survey instruments at county courthouses and at state houses so that politicians could get to know different surveyors and what our tools are and the services we provide to the public. And this is a great service. So if you live near a county courthouse or a state house and you want to get involved and you're comfortable speaking with politicians and the public, it's a wonderful opportunity for public interaction. Other surveyors are going to go, as I said, to schoolyards with permission and set up their equipment and talk to children about what we do. I think that's one of the biggest things we can do, in addition to occupying benchmarks for the National Geodetic Survey.
And I think we're going to try to do the GPS Day map again. I believe we're going to do that for that kind of data, so we can see where all the observations were taken. The good folks at ESRI help us with that each time. So as the data comes in, then we can share it with those guys. Interesting what you were saying earlier about connecting to folks at the state capitals or the county courthouses or whatever, and how people what we're doing resonates with them, and they remember it as time goes on. I was talking to somebody the other day about the Lewis and Clark expedition, 200th anniversary, where the markers were set all across the country with the big brass disc with the peace medal on it. And, of course, the first one was at Monticello. And I was talking about that, and somebody in my audience said, yeah, that he had been to Monticello sometime relatively recently, and they were looking around trying to figure out where that mark was. And they ran across a person who worked there. I don't know if it was a maintenance person, but somebody who was on the staff there. And they looked a bit confused, and the guy asked if they could help. And they said, we're surveyors. And that's all they had to say. And the guy said, it's right over there. I guess he'd had so many people coming by asking him about it, he knew if he was talking to surveyors, they wanted to know where that marker was. So, and what's interesting about that, I think, is for this particular purpose is, maybe not everybody are total GPS geeks, but surveyors really are interested in leaving tracks, so to speak. And so this, as you said, this is an exceptionally good opportunity for surveyors to get out and participate. And it doesn't just have to be on a particular day. I mean, we got the whole week, and of course we want people to reach out to their local media or service groups. And I don't know if you've had much experience in doing that kind of thing to promote the profession, either on National Surveyors Week or otherwise, but that's certainly part of the program as well.
Yeah, I didn't myself. I stood in the background and cheered and encouraged and helped other people participate. But I can tell you that a number of my volunteers got involved with their local newspapers and radio and definitely got articles out beforehand. And then during the day, I should send you a couple of those because there were some really nice articles. You know, New Jersey has, because it's a colonial state, we have a history that we actually have a law on the books that requires an azimuth for surveyors at every county courthouse. They have to come down and check their compass to a true azimuth every year. And we had one group of surveyors that actually occupied one with GPS and had people, and it really explained the history, how far we've come from using a compass to using GPS. So
that's
pretty
interesting.
Those kind of things really touch the public.
So that's an interesting, I don't think I've ever heard, do you know if other states require that?
It's not so much that we still require it, but that it was required at one time.
Right.
And I believe I heard a similar type of thing when I was in West Virginia, because they have a tremendous history of compass surveying.
Oh, yeah.
I think if people started to look in their law books, they'd be surprised what they found.
Yeah, that's probably true. We take for granted what's there today without really thinking about the historical side of it in a lot of cases. There's no question about that. So what are your suggestions for our listeners in terms of, obviously they can go to our website and find information. Any other pieces of advice? And particularly, I guess, maybe maybe we, and I know we're a few minutes away from break here, but and we can maybe begin this in this session, but maybe it would be helpful to just sort of walk through the steps for people in terms of this participation with NGS, because I know it's all spelled out, but maybe it would be helpful to just to have a little bit of a discussion about the process.
Absolutely. So if you are listening and you have a pencil, you should go to the following website. It's www.ngs.noaa.gov/heightmod/gpsonbm.shtml. That is the National Geodetic Survey's website for the 2014 GPS on Benchmarks campaign. And in it, there's a step-by-step process shown on how to participate. I don't know if we have that up on our website, Kurt, but if we
actually
don't...
I'm looking right here. I just clicked on the link that's on the website, and it takes me to the Height Modernization page, 2014 GPS on Benchmarks campaign, and the how to participate. So that's what you're talking about, I think.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. So if you weren't able to write that down and you're listening, just go to the nsps.us.com, and on the home page, right at the top, actually, we have a whole section in there about National Surveyors Week, and there's a link directly to that. As a matter of fact, let me back up there and tell people exactly. It says 2014 GPS on Benchmarks campaign, and that's an actual link that'll take them right to that page.
Terrific. And we can go through these steps one at a time. There's some really great tools on there that every surveyor should have if they don't have.
Okay, yeah, let's do that. I know we're a couple minutes from break here, so we'll chat a bit here when we come back. Maybe it'd be a good idea to go through those steps. I think that would be helpful, actually.
Mm-hmm. I had Google Earth on my PC in West Virginia when I was there, and I had it on my table, and I was able to show the map overlay that comes from DS World that shows the geoid errors. I was able also to show them all the benchmarks that go through, and you know where they needed to go to occupy benchmarks to improve their geoid. It was a very valuable learning tool, and so any surveyor that can download this, or any state society or chapter, or anybody could download this and see what they can do to help in their town, in their county, or in their state.
Okay. We're probably just a few seconds from break, so if it's okay with David at the station, we'll go ahead and take that final break, and when we come back, we can go through those steps.
Very good.
Attention surveyors, are you aware that yellow stick you're using is saving lives all over the world? Yes, that pinfinder is clearing fields and villages of unexploded cluster bombs and other hidden explosives in over 25 countries. Schonstedt, in cooperation with international mine action programs, provides free locators to where they are most urgently needed. To find out how you can help, visit the NSPS website at nsps.us.com, and thank you.
Quick stakes are not just an affordable alternative to heavy wooden stakes, but they save the surveyor time, which means money, by being easy to carry, easy to ride on, and even easier to see. For more information about quick stakes, go to www.quickstake.com, or for a sample, give us a call at 800-438-0387.
Schonstedt Instrument Company has been making locating easier since 1953. First, with its yellow stick, the GA52CX, the industry standard for sensitivity. Then, the GA72CD, a shorter and more rugged version offering a magnetic polarity display and a battery and sensitivity indicator. And most recently, the GA92XT, built for portability. It retracts to fit in its holster and extends for one-handed operation and fingertip control. See them all at Schonstedt.com. That's Schonstedt.com.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back, everyone, to our last segment today with Frank Linick. As we were going to break, we were talking about the activities, the Benchmarks campaign, And Frank, you mentioned that it might be useful for us to go through those steps for people just to sort of get them kicked off and hopefully spark their interest.
Yes, indeed. It's an important thing to remember that the National Genetic Survey has been suffering over the past few years from budget cuts, and also retirements have decimated the number of staff. Many people probably aren't aware that they don't have an active field crew anymore to go out and do leveling or triangulation or GPS observations on a campaign-wide idea. So they really need the participation of surveyors. They need our boots on the ground, and they will provide the analysis, the scientific analysis of the data, which we will need for our use in the future. So really, this is a big cooperative effort that we're trying to encourage here.
And by the way, Frank, before we go ahead, it's maybe of interest to the group to know that we as NSPS have been collaborating with NGS to form a partnership where through our membership we can assist, and they've been very gracious and accepting our offer to do that. So although this is a National Surveyors Week activity, it really won't end there.
Another thing that most people probably aren't aware of, at one time, National Geodetic Survey had a lot of geodetic advisors throughout the country, you know, working in the various states with departments of transportation and geodetic control surveys on a statewide basis. And the budget cuts on the state level, the federal level, and the attrition, there are currently only 24 advisors to cover all 50 states, the district, and all the territories. So anything we can do to help them will help us. So I think that's an important idea to keep in mind. So if you go to the NSPS website and you find the link to the National Geodetic Survey 2014 GPS on Benchmark campaign, there's a little paragraph that introduces you to it, why to participate, but then it tells you how to participate. It tells you how to get DS World, which is a wonderful free program from NGS. It'll work in conjunction with your Google Earth. You can download the geoid accuracy map. You can plot by using this program. You plot by state and county geodetic control in first order, second order, NAVD88 benchmarks, and they will appear on your screen and make it easy for you, you know, to visualize where they are. But they are live, so when you click on them, if you're connected to the internet, you will get a data sheet, you can get photographs, you can get recovery information on all of these different benchmarks. So it really makes the process simpler for you to research what monument you might want to occupy. So once you do that, you can look at the orange areas, which are the areas of greatest concern. I think they're in the 8 to 10 centimeter range. And figure out, you know, where you can do the most good in your state, in the region you practice, wherever. You can visit the benchmark, hopefully before National Surveyors Week. I know it was a little problematic. We were concerned with all the snow we had up here, whether we'd be able to find them. But last week's warm weather has cleared things up tremendously. And NGS wants you to update the description, take photographs, of the monument when you find it, set up your GPS receiver, log raw data, and then upload it to OPIS. You need to be familiar a little bit with OPIS, so it's not a bad idea to give it a test run, because when you fill in your information, you have to provide the file, the data file from your computer, how to get to it, what type of GPS antenna, the height of the antenna, your email address. But one of the things it asks you, do you want to customize your report, and do you want to share it? Do you want to share your data? That's the most important thing. So that means your name and your email address will be attached to the recovery and to the observation. This doesn't only have to be done on NGS benchmarks. You can do it on any point you'd like, but specifically for this project, we're asking that you do it on any VD88 benchmarks. I wrote an article about a final point that I did for a surveyor who had passed away in Pennsylvania, where we set a mark and submitted that to the database, and now a monument with this surveyor's name on it is actually in the NGS database, and you can go there and use it for your survey purposes if you so choose. It's just another thing you can do.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Of course, obviously, this is something we're doing for the week, and then as we move forward. And so that was something I was going to ask about in terms of providing data to help populate the system, if that's the right terminology. And somebody's working on a project where permanent marks are set, whether it be a final point or whether it be something else. Are then those going to be useful for future populating of the system? Is that part of the plan, or are we really looking to identify existing marks to set up the new system?
Well, you're asking a very deep question, and my crystal ball is a little cloudy at the moment. I don't know what our technology will be like in 10 or 15 years. What I know, the most important thing we could do to help right now is to occupy NAVD88 benchmarks to improve the geoid and to prepare for the transition to the 2022 datum, whatever that datum is going to be. That is the most useful thing we can do.
Okay.
I remember back around 2000 when I was first getting involved with establishing national cores, that is continually operating GPS reference stations for submission to the National Geodetic Survey. And one of the things we were doing while we were setting up the cores was we were trying to establish monuments in every town within a county, an intervisible pair, so that surveyors without GPS could still put state plane coordinates on their surveys and their subdivisions. The intent of that was so that we did not create a situation where we were legislating surveyors out of business because they didn't have the technology. I don't know if the logic behind that, if you can follow that. But if you didn't have GPS, if you were required by the government to put state plane coordinates on your subdivision plats, and you didn't have GPS, you couldn't do subdivision plats. So what counties were doing was establishing control on the ground, which was a good thing. Will we get to a time in 10 or 15 years where surveyors are only using GPS to establish coordinates? It could happen, or some other tool. It certainly could happen. But I think for the near term, I would recommend putting additional marks on the ground because we know they're torn out every day by construction. And we also know that the National Geodetic Survey is not establishing new benchmarks and new control points. So it's for our own good, I think, to continue to establish marks.
Yeah, I would agree. I remember working in those days you were just speaking about in one particular county, and they had a policy where, and this may have been commonplace, but they had a policy where in lieu of setting the markers, the owner of the land who was seeking subdivision would pay a fee to the county, which was to be put toward setting more marks and populating the network. Mm-hmm. That money didn't always go for that purpose, but that was the intent. But you're right. I mean, those were times when you had a mandate, you were supposed to do something, and not always have the tools available to make it happen. I'm sitting here looking at the site, and there's a picture on the site of a GPS unit over a point at Harper's Ferry, and it looks to me to be the same mark that was the second of the Lewis and Clark disc that were set, because it was set at Harper's Ferry. And Dave Doyle was there. We were up there when the dedication of that thing. I think it's the exact same spot.
Well, I can tell you this. I shot my mouth off to one of the NGS advisors, and I told them that the National Geodetic Survey, that the National Society of Professional Surveyors was going to occupy 1,000 NAVD-88 benchmarks for them this year, probably this month, for the Hike Modernization Program. And I threw down the gauntlet. I challenged all the NSPS governors to see if they could be the state with the most observations. And I would present an award at our April meeting to the governor for the state that got the most observations for the NAVD-88 benchmark.
Well, that's a nice incentive, and glad that you got everybody involved in that, because whether or not we get 1,000, certainly it will be helpful. And then, of course, it doesn't have to end at the end of the week. Of course,
no. And in fact, you don't have to wait for the week to begin.
Yeah, that's true too.
I have already submitted my first one for this year. When I was in West Virginia on Friday, I took a GPS receiver out to a nearby airport, found a second-order benchmark, and did an OPIS position. So if anybody wants some more incentive, West Virginia is already out
on the map
with their first observations.
That's great. So. Well, we have about a minute left before our hour is up. As always, it goes too quickly, but just want to thank you for being with us today and talking about the program and helping people better understand what it is we're trying to do and why it's important to us to be a part of it as surveyors, and pointing out the website and helping people understand that. So I appreciate all that you do for NSPS and for surveyors in general, and for leading this effort on our behalf to kick off our participation with NGS moving forward to help with this new definition of elevation that's going to be affecting all of us pretty soon.
Kurt, it's truly been my pleasure. Something I said to the West Virginia surveyors was that I have two children. They have never been hungry. They've always been clothed. They've always had a roof over their head. I was able to put them both through college, and all of this, all of these blessings which I have had, have come through the grace of God, and also through my profession, which is land surveying. And
very
I have
true.
No
That's...
problem. I have no problem giving back to my profession, and I think if you look at yourself, you would feel the same way.
That's true. That's a great way for us to end. Sorry, but we have to go. So, but thank you again, Frank, for being with me. It's been a great program.
This is America's Web Radio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.